ただいまからマクロスタイム午前1時をお知らせいたします。
Hi everyone, welcome to the Macross Speaker World podcast, a podcast all about the world of Macross, the greatest anime about little girls and planes and music that's ever been created, you know, of all of them. I'm your guest, Craig, and I'm doing the intro because Gwyn couldn't think of an opening. Hi, Gwyn.
Hi, Craig, how's it going?
That's great, mate. Thank you so much for having me.
And we're here going through a bit of the culture in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm like, all the toilets are flushing backwards. It's definitely been a while.
Yep.
All those kangaroos in the backyard you've got there, mate.
Well, look, you know, those keep the koalas out of the trees.
But
that doesn't make any sense.
As anyone listening may have noticed, I'm on the road, and, you know, I recently was in the US for Macross Worldcon, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to get together a bunch of Australian Macross fans? Because, as we often come across in the cast, everyone's got their own unique take on how they got into Macross. So I put the call out, and Craig, I think you were the sole person on the forums.
Yeah, you got back to me. Yeah, thanks, Spanner. Appreciate that, brother. He's the only other one I know in person, Spanner76, giving you a shout out there, Brad. But, I do my own show and I'm always willing. As anyone who has ever listened to Repack knows, shutting me up is the real trick.
So let's quickly explain that for you. So you have your own podcast.
I do. I am one of the hosts of the Repacks podcast. We do a show all about toys and action figures. So we air once a week, usually for 1.5 to 2 hours, probably leaning towards 2 hours more often these days.
Mm.
And, we talk about all sorts of toys. I'm admittedly the only Macross, fan. So I'm the only one buying the Macross toys. So I guess that just tuned most everyone out. But, we talk about, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Star Wars, Kamen Rider, Super Sentai, God, I don't know what other toy lines we collect. Lego, Masters of the Universe, there's a variety of us, and we all collect different things. So, yeah, it's a toy show.
And I've got to say, we're sitting here in the middle of your, would you call this the man cave?
I wish it was a cave, that would be awesome. Definitely my study.
This window is unfortunate, you need to cover that up.
I've actually, if you look back there, you'll see that those are walk-in cupboards, it was a walk-in wardrobe, built-in wardrobe.
Oh, okay.
And I covered it with shelves, and the ladies in my house were very unimpressed.
What's in the wardrobe behind the shelves? Nothing, not the boxes? Nothing.
Nope.
Like that?
No, I don't keep the boxes.
Wow.
Boxes just take up space.
Like, in front of me, I've got an entire bookcase full of Transformers. Behind me, there's a bunch of Valkyries. To my right's a bunch of Kamen Rider. I can't think of too many places better suited to do a toy podcast.
Yeah, we do okay. And we only just moved. As we record this, we moved... it was 2 weeks yesterday since we first moved into this place. And it's just after Christmas, so... I've had a little bit, and my wife and my daughter are away visiting some family, so I've had a little bit of time to actually set up a lot. Like, the Transformers only went up day before yesterday, and a lot of the stuff over there. And it just
curiosity, how many Transformers would you say you've got? Is that Perceptor up there?
Yeah, that's Perceptor.
Oh, right.
We changed into a truck now.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it does.
How many of these would you say you have, Transformers, on the show? Because you told me it was a smaller collection, right?
It is a smaller collection. I only collect Transformers Generations, and I only collect Autobots. But, I don't know, maybe 60?
Right, definitely. Maybe. How long did those take you to set up?
This time? Not that long.
Yeah, you did yesterday. Well, did you transport them in vehicle mode? Or?
Nah, robot mode. I was going to transform them all. I couldn't be stuffed. I just chucked them in a box. Right, last time we moved, we'd been in our apartment 7 years.
Right.
And we knew we were moving well in advance. And so I spent months, like, all the G.I. Joe stuff got carefully bagged and put into things, and, like, all the little weapons and everything, so I didn't lose anything. And then all of the Transformers were transformed into vehicle mode and carefully put into boxes, and all the vehicles in bag, the weapons in bags and things like that. This time, and then we got to our new place in May, and then not long, everyone who listened to Repacked will know this, but not long after we were there, in November, at the end of November, they kicked us out because the owners decided they couldn't afford to pay the mortgage anymore, and thus we're going to sell it.
Hmm.
So we'd only been there 7 months, and we were given, they said, if you want to leave, we had to at the end of January, and they said, if you want to leave early, we won't, like, hit you with any of the early early leaving fees or anything like that, because we understand, you know, Christmas and everything. So we found a place pretty quickly and moved over here. So yeah, so everything's only just getting set up. And this time when I moved, I was like, fuck. And chucked it, like literally had a big crate of stuff and put my arm on the shelf and went like, just swept it all into the crate.
Wow.
With the Transformers, the Macross stuff and the figure arts, which are much more delicate, they all got very, very carefully packed still. I had a buddy of mine come over and who's also a toy collector. And he and I very carefully packed a lot of that stuff. And the Macross one was the last box packed and the first box unpacked.
And what was the Valk you'd say you're most concerned about, Transpoint, given the cost of some of these toys?
Well, the Arcadia's 19 was on top.
Right.
And it had the fast packs went on, the tails were folded down, and the wings were in high speed mode to make them narrow to the thing. And that was placed on top in its own sort of bubble wrap packet. The VF4 I wasn't that concerned about because it actually folds down nice and flat. Like these. I've got toys all over my desk, folks, so I'm pointing at them as we go. But these the little front, the canards fold down and the tails fold down and everything. Right, so that wasn't too bad. The Zeros have the tiny little pins on the back of the tails. I was a bit worried about them. Most of the Frontier stuff, I basically just individually wrap them. I've got all the renewals and the 29s and stuff. I just wrapped them pretty much individually so they didn't scratch the paint. And that was the only thing I was really concerned about with them.
Right.
And they came through okay. Like I had a figure arts break and I had something else break on me. I don't remember. Definitely a figure art broke.
Mm.
I had to buy a replacement. And I feel like something else broke, but I can't think what it was now, so it can't have been that important.
Well, one thing I've forgotten to ask for the benefit of the listeners, what's your handle name then?
The Scream Man. Scream Man, actually. No, it's Scream Man on Macross.
All right. And which forums do you normally find yourself lurking in?
I post a lot in toys and in less than I used to in the other anime sci-fi. I don't remember what it's called now. Hang on.
The anime and sci-fi.
The anime and sci-fi.
All that miscellaneous stuff.
Board. It's one of the shortcuts on my computer, so it immediately pops up. Anime and science fiction. That's the one. And toys. So those are the two I post in probably toys most often.
Right. Now, as I was saying, I mean, it's December, was it 28th today? 29th. Yeah, I'm on the ball as always, living in the past.
Just before 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And, we've got a little bit of a lull between Christmas and New Year's. Uh-huh. And so we thought we'd get together and have a chat. And I have been unable to find any of the old Macross fans I used to know in university in the Sydney area. I've come across one who I might be able to sit down and do some stuff with later on. But I've just been kind of flabbergasted by the lack of Macross fans that I've managed to come across. I know that Mac OzCon is done up in Brisbane. Does Brisbane have more Macross fans than Sydney? Is that what I'm seeing here?
I guess.
That's kind of shameful.
All of the ones I speak to, except for Spanner, again, son of a bitch. Except for Spanner, most of the ones I've spoken to are in Melbourne. I know there's Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
Falcon's in Melbourne. Murashima, I think, is his handle. I thought he was in Melbourne too. Those are the two I can think of off the top of my head.
Even newer fans.
Kurosawa is the one in Melbourne.
Well, even with newer fans, I expect to come across some Frontier fans at the very least, but there has just been minimal response. I went via the Facebook groups, via the website, and so poor showing, Sydney Macross fans. You should be ashamed of yourselves.
It's a good thing I'm here.
Yeah, next time I'm in the neighbourhood, which will be, funnily enough, December next year, because my younger brother's getting married.
No, there you go.
I expect to see more of you representing. But that's not to say we don't have an interesting show for you today. So as I mentioned, the experience of growing up with Macross, getting the Macross from the Australian perspective, was something I wanted to touch base on. So, I mean, in the past, in very early episodes, which, for anyone who may have noticed, are not on iTunes. They are available via the Macross World website, but we only get the most recent 10 episodes on iTunes. Most of our regular listeners, or like 2.5 of them, already know my background with Macross. But tell us a little bit about yourself, Craig. I mean, how did you first get into this crazy hobby?
I guess like most everyone, I watched Robotech as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I have pretty fond memories of watching it when I was, I guess, here it aired in, what, 85? 5?
I think it was... Are we talking the Saturday morning broadcast? The really early Saturday morning?
I don't remember that much. I know... When I saw it the first time, I only saw bits of it. Mm-hmm. I'd seen most of the original, like of Macross Saga. I saw bits of Southern Cross and New Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things that I only saw sporadically, so I was very confused when like I saw Southern Cross stuff. Or like I remember the opening being like, well, what are the motorcycle guys and what's the tank lady at the end? And like I never understood any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd see sporadic episodes and I was like, well, where's all the cast that the original, where's Rick and everyone? And it wasn't until the early 90s or mid-90s, Cheese TV, which was on weekdays.
Cheese TV
aired Robotech from start to finish, as far as I remember it, from start to finish.
Right.
And that was where I saw everything. That was where I watched it from go to woe. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
Just to give a sense of time and place, what do you remember what else they were playing on Cheese TV in those days?
Well, I remember other stuff I watched on Cheese TV, like Tekkaman Blade.
Yes,
was one, and
was more the mid-90s.
That was the mid-90s,
right.
But I mean, this time that I watched Robotech all the way through, it was a repeat. It was definitely the second time. I mean, the first time, you know, Astro Boy, Star Blazers, Battle of the Planets—that was all the stuff the first time around that were the animes that I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 35, so I grew up. I'm that exact age that remembers all of the cartoons all the way through, you know. G.I. Joe never aired in Australia. That's one that surprises a lot of Americans. That I knew G.I. Joe really well because I was a big fan of the toys.
Right.
And I collected the comics, which came out down here. But
did you get G.I. Joe Australia at any time? There's a black and white G.I. Joe comic book.
No, I've seen it since, but I didn't hilarious. At the time. Yeah, I know. Although Outback was always my favorite because in my head, Outback was an Australian. He's not.
Yeah, but you'd think he would be.
I think he's from Indiana or something on the farm card. But in my head, Outback has always been the Australian G.I. Joe. Because his name is Outback. Yeah, it just feels like it should be, right?
He's either Australian or a steakhouse, one or the other.
Maybe he's both. He kills people and then feeds them to other people in the steakhouse.
Now I sound like a Japanese guy.
Yeah, that just went weird. Lordy. All right, so then... I'm trying to think of other stuff that was airing in the 90s, early 90s. I mean, all the Disney ones, like, you know, Gummy Bears and DuckTales and Darkwing and everything. Mm. By the time I remember in high school, I'm trying to think of the stuff I watched in high school. X-Men, Spider-Man Animated.
Right.
Cheese TV, though, I'm trying to think. I know they aired Tekkaman Blade, Pokemon aired, but I was never a big fan of it. Dragon Ball Z aired, but I was never a big fan of it. It was Robotech was definitely the one I tuned in for. SWAT Cats towards the end of it. That was like more when I was like 8 to 17, 18, 19.
Right. But so Robotech obviously left the biggest impression on you.
Yeah, totally.
So what was it that grabbed you? What were those first impressions?
Jets. I love flying and planes and I'm scared, terrified of heights, weirdly. I fell off a cliff when I was younger and ever since then I get really, really bad vertigo in high places. Which is very, very frustrating to me because I love planes. I love little planes, big planes, fighters, all that sort of stuff. And I also like robots and mech and machinery. I'm a big sci-fi guy, but I like my. I don't mind a bit of hard sci-fi here and there, but I like my sci-fi a bit bombastic. I like it.
Right.
I like you know. Well, I mean, you know, Yamato and Star Wars. My wife. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. My wife and I met on a Star Wars forum.
That's really?
Her. Yeah. We met on theforce.net.
And she is approving of this man cave with a window here. And
approving is probably a tad strong. Tolerating.
Tolerating.
I think she wished I would. I think she wishes that there would be no new Macross shows. And thus, no new Macross toys.
Oh, do we have bad news for her?
I know. I came out, I was like really excited. I was like, there's going to be a new Macross show. And I watched a slump. Because it's one thing when I'm buying, you know, a $20 or $18, $20 G.I. Joe or something like that. It's a whole other ball game when I'm buying a $300 plane. And I'm like, but this is just the blue one. I also need the red one and the white one and the... Why is your nose bleeding, honey? But she's very, very tolerant. And one thing she appreciates is that she likes seeing quality. And so seeing the reason I get away with it is you can see the high quality of the toys. But that's, I guess if we're getting into the toy stuff, that's probably coming later down the track.
Right.
But yeah, so Robotech was a big deal. And then in the mid-90s, of course, the anime boom hit America, and we got the anime pop, which was about half of the anime boom of America.
Right. The conventions picked up over here, not to the same extent as the US, where you have one in every other state every other week, pretty much.
Yeah.
But we had now like Smash in Sydney and Supernova and
things. Yeah, although the Smash and Supernova, I remember mid-2000s. That started when I was married. I got married in 2003. And I don't think I went to Smash before that. It was Oz Comic Con. Do you remember
Oz Comic Con? It was OzCon, yeah. I actually have...
OzCon, you're right. It was OzCon, not Oz Comic Con.
I have a short letter or article in the guidebook for... It's either OzCon 92 or 93.
Really?
About Marvel. I think it was the year Bishop appeared.
Right. Was it the year Jim Lee came out?
Around that period where he was doing his
expo. No, where he was in...
Oh, where he was in?
OzCon, do you remember that?
It was either 92 or 93, but yeah, no, I did get his autograph.
It was in Centerpoint.
Chris Claremont was here too. That was the
same year?
No, the previous year.
I don't remember.
They had some at Centerpoint. They also did a couple down near Darling Harbour.
Right, they were later. Oh, no, they were... Yeah, and the big convention center in Darling Harbour, right. I remember those.
And they had way too much room, so I think they moved to Centrepoint.
And it was on two levels, you had to go up the escalator,
And in Centrepoint it was weird because Pogs had just come out, and for some reason there was this huge goddamn Pogs section in the middle of the convention.
That's right.
And that's when you started getting this merging. I feel like before that, it was mostly American comic books with a smattering of anime, if you knew where to look.
Yeah.
I quite by accident picked up a Miki Moto art illustrations book, that one with the original Macross characters and Ishtar.
Oh, yeah.
I opened it up and it was autographed.
Oh, very cool.
You know, in the day that was, I don't know, $40, $50. And for a high school
kid. Did you speak Japanese at that point?
For a high school kid, that was an amazing amount of money.
He shook his head.
No, that's right. Yeah, no, I didn't. Thank you.
Audio show.
I had just opened it and I was flabbergasted. That's very cool. But as a high school kid, that amount of money was like, that was like a month and a half's pocket money.
I'm going to say right now too, and we'll come back to what we're talking about, but real quick, I am awful with names.
Mm-hmm.
So I can remember Kawamori Mishimoto Tenjin.
Okay.
If you start going too deep into the name pool,
just ask me.
I'm not going to know. So I apologize to everyone out there. I'm awful with names. So it's please don't think less of me on the show.
I don't remember the names of most people I work with. Just the people I
interact with.
I make cartoons that I don't interact with daily. I remember them fine.
Okay, well that's fine then.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, OzCon. I don't remember. See, I was a big comics guy in as a teenager, so I remember generally coming out and showing him my art, which has not progressed much further than that. But it was when Heroes Reborn was out. I've got a Fantastic Four number one Heroes Reborn signed by Jim Lee somewhere. I think at my parents' place. And me and my best friend went along to that, and I remember like seeing what in my head was Robotech stuff, like a couple of VF1s, a lot of the Chunky Monkey, the old Takatora ones.
Yeah, they were Takatoku ones. Right? And they were scattered. Like you'd find them at the dealer's table, everywhere
here and there. Usually very expensive.
Yeah, 95% of the stuff would be comic books, but you just get these small little bits and pieces, which is really different to the American experience from what I hear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because in Australia, like when I sort of said it jokingly before, but in America, the anime boom was huge. It was on TV a lot, and as well as, you know, VHS tapes and stuff like that. But in Australia, we get the echoes of that. Mm-hmm. And we also get everything later than America. And I think they forget... I say they. That's because you and I sitting in the room. There are people who can't understand that I never... Like, knew the anime boom, but never saw Ranma Half, never saw Urusei Yatsura, never saw Dragon Ball, the original, or anything like that. Because it never came to Australia. Or if it did, I never saw it. Dragon Ball Z did, and later on a lot of that stuff did. But at the time, it wasn't that. The anime boom for me was Tekken Man Blade. I really wish I could think of the stuff that aired at the same time as Tekken Man, because I know there was a block where I used to watch...
Wasn't there, like, Cops playing as well?
Yeah, but GoPuff was an anime.
But
and that was more 80s too. That was in the original, like mid to late 80s. But it was a lot of that in terms of the anime boom, where I remember that art style and that things getting things were more serious. Like it was cartoons being taken seriously, for lack of a better phrase. It was a lot of it was on VHS.
So what were you seeing at OzCon? Like you said, you saw a couple of Takotoku, some art.
Yeah, I mean, it was mainly the toys because I was
on Macross. What were you seeing then back in the day?
Oh, I mean, it was a lot. I mean, what I used to see that what I used to look for because I think it's one of those things that you remember what you were looking for. I'm sure there was a ton of anime stuff. I just didn't care.
Right.
I remember lots of comic stuff. I remember. The first, and I've been to the States a bunch of times. My dad loves Hawaii. He's a big Hawaii. He's nuts for Hawaii. He wears Hawaiian shirts, listens to Hawaiian music. I speak a little Hawaiian. Like, all sorts of random Hawaiian stuff.
Well,
so
if he's wearing Hawaiian shirts, you just say he's cosplaying Bruce Campbell.
he would not know who that was. I could tell him he was cosplaying Don Ho.
Okay.
And then he would ask what cosplaying is, but he would get the Don Ho reference. But my dad... So growing up, I've been to Hawaii 9 times.
Wow.
But we had, for years, I remember, like, to give you an idea of the technology in my house, we had a VHS with a cord for the remote. Like, it was attached to a long cord that stretched across the room.
Which you'd trip over if you weren't careful.
And my sister, I'm pretty sure, ripped out of the VHS by tripping over it one day. But, you know, and a little TV and a radio, and, like, it was a very bare-bones house, because my parents would save up and save up and save up, and we'd go on these trips.
Right.
Always to Hawaii or somewhere in Hawaii. Somewhere and Hawaii, sorry, that should have been. And that was very frustrating. I mean, in a sense, I mean, it's funny. People are like, oh, damn, you went to Hawaii 9 times, you poor bastard. But I was like, it is my dream to see New York City, for example. I would love to see New York. I would have loved to go into, you know, Tokyo or Hong Kong or anywhere. We went to LA a couple of times, and we went to, because my dad loved Disneyland as well, and Hawaii a lot. But in Hawaii, that was where I would see things, like I would get a lot of toys that I didn't see over here, and I would get a lot of comics that I would see over here but were cheaper in America.
A lot cheaper.
This is the other thing. In Australia, when I started collecting comics, they were $2 at the news agency. $2. And that was around the time X-Men 1, the Jim Lee X-Men 1 and stuff was coming out. That's when I really got into comics.
Right.
I remember the first 4 comics I bought that weren't G.I. Joe, because I collected G.I. Joe as a kid. And right up until the end of the series, were... it was a Spectacular Spider-Man issue with the Fabulous Frogman on the cover. It was Batman, I want to say 400. It was the first time that John Paul Valley wore the Batman armor when he took over as Batman. Do you know the suit I mean?
It rings a bell. That would have been around the time I was actually real into comics as well.
So yeah,
probably got that lying around somewhere.
I've got it somewhere, I sold it. But, Azrael Batman. Like that suit.
Oh, yep.
That one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that in fact that's the first full issue. That's in the comics. That's when you first see it.
Right.
The internet. So there was Batman 400, the Spider-Man one, X-Men number one, and I forget what the fourth one was. I think it was another X-Men one. And that ignited my love for Western comics. And right. But in Australia, first of all, there were only 2 comic book stores in Sydney that I knew about.
What were they?
Comics and Cards.
Right.
And Comic Kingdom.
Yeah. And after that, we got King's Comics.
Yeah, do you remember when it was down the escalators?
Yep.
Under the, yeah.
They do those New Year's sales. Everyone would be lined up and just to get...
up the escalator, yeah.
Just to get, like, your multiple copies of Dragon.
Yeah, or something
the
weird.
The Savage Dragon for, like, 50 cents or something.
But, so I went to America, and it's like, yeah, bins of comics. Here's the 50-cent bin. Here's the dollar bin. To date, I listen to podcasts where they're like, you know, the dollar bins and the 50-cent bins. If you go to Supernova today, they're the $5 bins, right. The $3 bins.
Right.
There's not... So I remember going to Hawaii, and my dad taking me to this... It was a record shop that had a big comic selection as well. And I picked up an entire run of Gen 13.
Okay.
From the miniseries to the end for $1 a pop.
Nice.
And I remember, I distinctly remember the stack being like a foot high of all these comics that are, that I picked up. So, in terms of, to get back, that was a long way around to get to this point, I'm sorry. To get back to anime, it was never really my focus. I remember the, if I saw VF1s, because I loved Robotech, and again, Jets, so the VF1 really stood out to me. Mm-hmm. I never had a Jetfire. I knew that the Jetfire toy looked like a VF1. I couldn't explain why for years. I had, eventually, around the time I was like 14 or 15, I got given a model kit of Myria's VF1J. Which I couldn't read the instructions for or anything. I got it together, didn't have any stickers, didn't have... You all right?
Yeah. I tend to pop.
Okay. Didn't have any stickers, didn't have any labels on it. I mean, it had them, I just didn't know how to put them on. The decals. I didn't paint it, I didn't do anything, I just slapped it together, and I knew it transformed with a minimal of having to take parts off and put them back on again. And I played with that until it broke.
How long did that take?
6 months, 8 months.
That's a fair amount of playtime.
It wasn't until my last trip to LA in 98 that I went up to Mile High Comics, which is in Anaheim, which was just up from Disneyland where we were staying.
That's where they make all the Gundams, right? Anaheim?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't watch Gundam, so if you say so. I'm assuming that's a reference that lots of people will laugh at that I didn't... That I
well,
won't,
I don't know.
I won't understand the joke for.
I may edit it out. Anyway. So you went to Anaheim.
No, it's fine. But, so I went up to Mile High Comics and bought... I found the Jetfire toy in its box.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it back to the hotel, peeled every Autobot sticker off it, used a black marker to scribble in the other ones, so they were just black circles, and that was my VF1. That was my Robotech Veritech.
Okay.
For years. From 98 until when the first VF1s came out from Yamato.
Right.
Like, whenever that was, which I think was the early 2000s, that was my VF1. On my shelf in pristine, and it eventually broke. All the fast packs and everything shattered because it was old and the plastic was brittle. Right. And it went yellow, and it, I don't know what happened to it in the end. I think I sold it, or what was left of it. But
so you mentioned these comic shops. As far as actual anime stuff, I'm presuming when you weren't traveling, most of any looking around for stuff you did would have been around Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you remember where people would go to actually buy anime?
So at first, it was a lot of renting stuff. It was renting VHS tapes at Video Easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're from down south, right, Shai?
Yeah.
So Video Easy's, and I'm sure you had the same selections I did. So let's see if we can run through.
Ninja Scroll,
Akira.
Yeah.
Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Gaiba.
Yeah.
Yusuke Doji.
Right. Well, depending on your shop, video shop, because there was a campaign to get a band for a while.
AD Police.
Yeah.
The original Bubblegum Crisis.
We didn't have that.
Oh, really?
That for years.
I got the original Bubblegum Crisis.
We had Legend of the Dragon Kings.
Legend of the Dragon Kings, yeah. What's the one with the chick with the yo-yo?
Tsukuban Dekka?
Tsukuban Dekka.
How about Crying Freeman?
Yes, but I never watched it. I knew it was there, but I never watched it. I did later, but I did watch it at the time.
I recently rewatched the whole thing on DVD, and what I thought was hilarious was A, the earlier episode stood up way better than I thought, and B, my office sponsored the second last episode. I had no idea. And no one at my office probably remembers it either. So.
Your office now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I forgot it was a series. In my head, Crying Freeman was a movie, but I guess it wasn't.
It's like, six episodes, but there were at least like 2 episodes of tape, I think it was.
I'm trying to think.
I know you're under arrest. Did you have that?
Nope. No? There was Dominion Tank Police.
Oh, yeah.
Appleseed, the original Appleseed movie.
That 2D one, yep.
Yeah. Which I think is still
the better one?
Well, it's the most like the manga.
Right.
I'm not a manga guy. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the only manga I've ever enjoyed multiple times and own a copy of is Appleseed.
And that's the one that doesn't finish.
It is the one that doesn't finish. But I love the technology. Kurosawa?
That was okay, now I'm forgetting.
Shiro.
Masamune Shiro.
Masamune Shiro. The technical, the first book I had of it was the I think it's called the File Book, and I've still got it.
Oh, that's like the extras book.
Yeah, yeah, which has all the technical, and had a little story, and I was like, this is awesome, and I went and got all the Dark Horse.
And all those notes he had.
And all the guns, and how it all fit together, and how the mechs work. I used to, like I said, I showed Jim Lee my art, and I used to draw and stuff, and what got me not drawing superheroes anymore was a combination of the Apple Suit File Book, Wings of Honey Armies, that was another one.
Yeah.
Wings of Honey Armies, Macross Plus, but the two were there was Tekken Man Blade,
okay,
and Gaiva were the two that made me go, this is, I love magic armors, I love armor that folds and wraps around and cool armor
comes out of that little hole in the back of your neck.
Well, in Gaiva's case, yes. I loved that, loved it. To date, huge Kamen Rider fan.
So other than Video Easy, where else did you get anime from back
in Target? Kmart. I remember I had a campaign with my local Kmart that they'd put Ninja Scroll in the kids section.
Oh, wow.
And I would be like, this does not belong in the kids section, because I'm like 15, 16. And they would say, but it's a cartoon. I'm like, lady, it's got M written on the side of it. And she's like, yes, but it's a cartoon. And if you remember, like a lot of stores, they have the players that'll play stuff. And I said, all right, well, if it's a cartoon, let's throw it on.
Oh.
And she's like, really? I said, yes, let's throw it up there. We'll skip through that. Because the other thing, do you remember, did you time how long you'd have to get into the tape to skip?
Or the manga.
Or the manga, yeah.
They were pretty long.
I don't remember how long I was there. It was like 12 minutes, I think. But so I was like, fast forward 12 minutes in, that's when the movie starts, and you skip all the ads. She's like, all right. So now, do you remember the opening of Ninja Scroll? It's the ninja swapping through the trees, and the big guy with the sword, and the blood everywhere, and drinks the blood. She got as far as... Like, I think she was stunned for a bit. She goes as far as, like, drinking the blood out of the guy's arm. She's like, this is horrible! Who would watch this? And I said, adults. Teenagers. It's not a kid's cartoon. She's like, okay. And so from then on, if I'd see Akira or anything like that, and I'd pull them off the shelf and say, these belong in the adult section.
So, shopping in Sydney, I found the main...
I know what I was going to say. Sorry. To keep going, you were talking about the Chinatown stuff.
Right.
Did you go in at first, it was in the QVB, the Queen Victoria Building. And,
What
was it called?
The Cartoon Gallery.
Cartoon Gallery, that's right. And they had stills up. They had frames from Akira and a bunch of stuff. And that was... I saw those, I'm pretty sure, before I saw anime.
Oh, really?
I'm almost positive I found... Because my parents liked the clock and everything.
In the QVB.
In the QVB, there's a big, elaborate clock that has like when it chimes 12, there's little skits, little
an animatronic
kind of little mini figures and stuff that go around it. My parents thought that was really cool, so I remember seeing Cartoon Gallery and being like, well, that sounds cool, and going in, and it was a lot of anime stuff.
Yeah, the owner, Michael,
that's right, and the lady, his wife
was in there. Had a guy who also worked for them, but they ended up, I found, being the central point for getting new anime.
Oh, yeah.
Occasionally, they'd get NTSC imports, but they'd get anything released in PAL, whether it be UK or Australia.
Yeah.
They'd get some soundtracks, because he'd travel to Japan and come back with art books. I bought, like, a $60 Escaflowne art book there once.
Yeah. Sorry, that was me getting a text.
No worries. The soundtrack, import soundtrack for Wings of Oni and Mist, the original, I think, was a two-disc set, was, like, $120. Because it was almost impossible to get. So their prices were such that they had all this great stuff you could look at, but no one really bought anything other than the local releases because of the costs involved, I found. So I'd go up there. That's where I got Macross Plus from.
The first time?
Was
it just when it was just the first couple of episodes and the ending?
Yeah, well, then there was the 6 or 10 month gap between episodes three and four.
Yep, I remember. I saw four at the OzCon in Centrepoint, I'm almost
positive. Oh, okay. That must have been an advanced screening.
Yeah, it was. Right. It was before it came out. Yeah, I think it was the one that... I definitely saw it at a con. Like, I saw it at that convention, saw the fourth episode, and then there was still this huge gap before we actually got to see four. But yeah, Cartoon Gallery. Yeah, no, and then eventually they moved to Pitt Street.
They did. It took them a while. I mean, I think, honestly, and I may be speaking out of turn, their business was on the way down by the time they moved. But then again, they moved pretty much just around the time I left the country. So all my memories of them are really in the QVB. I visited them once after they moved when I was in Sydney for work, and they were already emptying out their stock and getting ready to close up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were selling online for a while, a lot of Michael's stuff he had left in a garage.
Yeah.
But
I was mainly the lady that I spoke to. I don't her name now?
I spoke to both of them a fair bit. I don't know what happened to Michael. I mean, he was a great guy, very interesting to talk to. Unfortunately, you know, as DVDs took off and then got cheaper, you know, he was importing all this stuff on his own dime, so there was a certain markup involved there. And that,
yeah, that's yes. right. Well, and it's one of those things that, as an adult, I understand why.
Right.
But at the time, you know, I was just a kid, and I'm like, well, why should I pay $60 per VHS tape for two episodes?
Right.
You know, it's funny, you know, you think back to the models. Like, I remember buying Bubblegum Crisis a disc at a time. I bought Read or Die, Escaflowne, a whole bunch of stuff, disc at a time. And, you know, you buy the first one of the box, and then you'd fill the box. We were dumb. Like, that was a stupid model. And we were like, yeah, well, that sounds legit.
Well, I mean,
it's the way they did it in Japan, but I mean,
yeah, exactly. And it was still a lot cheaper than, I mean, the funny thing is, each one of those volumes in Japan would have been between 6,800 and 7,800 yen. You know, for people complain about prices now, I always look at Do You Remember Love, because the Blu-ray with all those, granted, the Blu-ray's raw, but it comes with all these reprintings of magazine articles and theatrical posters, and the limited edition comes with flashback, and it also comes with a game. And all that came to a price that was still $30 cheaper than the bare bones VHS release back in the day. But granted, as a kid, you don't care about this.
No, that's right. So yeah, Cartoon Gallery is definitely a big one. Right. That's where I first remember seeing anime. Like, I distinctly remember they had a still from Akira, which was Tetsuo with like the gross stuff coming out of
his arm, right?
Yeah. You remember that? I remember that, had that in the thing of frames.
They also had a poster rack there, which is one of the few anime poster racks I'd ever seen. And they had mostly, you know, Dominion Tank Police, Akira, those sort of posters. I distinctly also remember I bought a volume at a time, You're Under Arrest, up there.
Which really?
Four volumes at a time.
I've never seen You're Under Arrest. I know of it, but I've never seen it.
Well, that was really a big thing back in the day. But that and things like Neo Macross Plus, of course. But other than that, I was at the University of Technology Sydney, which is one of the most boring universities you can go to, because it's got this campus where you go there, you go to class, you might eat, and you get the hell out. There's nowhere to hang out. So I would go up the road to the University of Sydney. I joined their anime club, where they let anyone join.
Right.
And you could go up there, and I think every 2 weeks or so, they do these screenings where, you know, you could also order pizza before you go in, and the pizza would have arrived by the intermission, and you have your pizza, then you go back in. And they'd show, like, you know, two or four episodes of Slayers, maybe a movie.
They've never seen Slayers.
Just a bunch of, like, a mixed bag. And that was my first real experience of watching anime in a group, because you'd have, like, 50, 60 people there. And that was a lot of fun. I don't know if they're still doing it. I've still got my 2001 membership card lying around somewhere.
I hear a lot of people, like, on podcasts talking about anime groups and all that sort of thing, and I didn't even know that that was possible. Like, I didn't even know that that was a thing. So, but yeah, so to go back to the, to, I guess, try to tie it back into Macross, since we've stopped talking about it about an hour and a half ago. The thing was, Macross Plus was the, and Macross 2 were in that boom. That same boom we're talking about with Ninja Scroll and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They were both on VHS. So
different distributors though for us.
I didn't know that at the time.
Okay. Macross 2 is manga. Oh, no, hang on. I thought Macross 2 was Kiseki. I'm not sure.
It might have been.
Anyways.
Manga's the one everyone remembers. Right. Manga! And then the ads and everything. It's gonna kick ass. Like that voice of...
Those commercials were great.
Oh, they were so... I mean, they were bad, but they were
awesome. Like to see someone do one of those commercials for modern moe anime with that voice, you know. Do all these My Sister Can't Possibly Be That Cute kind of thing, but with the manga announcer doing the trailer.
She's a little girl and she likes to... Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what's
in the big... Your mind will explode.
Your mind will explode. I'm trying to think of an anime... What's a big anime right now? Something big.
Yeah, like right now? Like...
Okay, I just finished watching Sword Art Online.
Okay.
He's a badass assassin from... In the digital world, things are more real than the real world.
I think this needs to be done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll do the voice. I'm fine with it. It hurts your throat, but it's fun to do. So yeah, so Macross Plus and Macross 2.
Macross 2, right.
And so I was like, holy crap, this is Robotech. It's more Robotech. Because Macross 2 especially the VF2SS is a very clearly reminiscent of VF1s. Mm-hmm. And Gusecki flies around in the reporter version of the VF1, or something that looks like a VF1,
mm.
really early on. And so I was like, all right, cool, so this is Macross 2, and mm-hmm. at the time you don't notice the crappy dubbing, you're just like, this is awesome.
Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit. But I remember the opening.
Uh-huh.
To date, I love that opening.
It's a great
opening. Even the song is catchy. And I distinctly remember the part, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's got the VF2SS flies back up, flips, and then the missiles all fly out.
And then Feff comes through the...
Yeah, and then Feff comes through the smoke, yeah. Like, I distinctly remember that opening vividly. Vividly. And it's the one, like, I've got, you know, what I later found out with third-party TV. I went to a DVD shop before I understood that you could buy, like, Hong Kong rip-offs weren't real DVDs. Right. So I've got Zero Plus, I've got Plus, the official, the anime go ones, or whoever,
right.
the manga ones, maybe. The ones manga, that's right, one and two, and then three and four.
Yeah, that'd yeah. be manga. Over here, was it Madman?
Or might have been, yeah, it was Madman, yeah. So I've got the Madman ones of that, but I've got 0 to 7 on these what I now know are Hong Kong
bootlegs. Right, right.
But I didn't know that at the time. I was just like, I finally found them. They got right. subtitles. Great. Right. And look how cheap they are. That's insane. And so I've still got those. But then eventually, I mean, if you're a Western Macross fan, you have to have pirated them, because it's the only real way to get them for a long time. I mean, now you can buy some of the Blu-rays, but at the time. And I got a batch that was all of everything Macross, mm-hmm. every Macross show subbed, except two, which is dubbed. And I still cannot find two subbed.
Hmm.
Because I think it would improve the experience greatly if I didn't have to listen to the English dub.
Right. Well, I mean, I know the US got it on DVD. It got the yeah. legit release, which is still very easy to find over there. Very cheap.
Yeah, I should see if I can find it. But anyway, so 2 and Plus, and loved it. I was like, oh my god, more Robotech. And then I watch and go, I don't understand. What, this doesn't seem to fit new generation. Because right. again, at the time, I had no idea that this... I was just like... They're calling it Macross, presumably to reminisce about the first series of
mm-hmm.
Robotech.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't understand that it was separate things. And I don't remember how I started to find it out, because this is... A lot of the stuff was happening, you know, 94 to 97, 98.
Right.
So by the time I left high school, 90, sort of 96, 97, 98, 99... I left mm-hmm. in 97, but around that period, that's when the internet went from being something that only... a few people had to being much more commonplace.
Right, right.
I had it. I got it in 98.
Okay.
At my that in my house, that was on my old 486, and was the dial up, and I had my own phone line
mm-hmm.
because that way I wouldn't tie up the phone in the house and everything like that. Like wow. I paid for all that myself. 98.
Here I was disconnecting the phone, dragging the cord across the kitchen to plug into my Dreamcast to play Quake 3 with people in the US.
Very cool.
Anyway,
but so. That was where I started to learn, and of course by the time you get to the end of the sort of 95, 96, 97, of course you get Evangelion,
right?
Which aired here on SBS back to back with something else. I don't remember what, but it Evangelion was the biggie, and I remember they aired not all of it. Do you remember they aired like up to like around somewhere in the teens, and then it stopped, and then it started again, and they aired everything two at a time?
Did they?
Yeah.
I saw the first episode, and...
Oh, you never watched?
Well, I'd seen Ever Raw, and didn't understand what was going on, and was really looking forward to finally seeing it subtitled, because it's SBS. They generally, up until that point, subtitled everything, so we had, like, an Evangelion party. We knew when it was going to be on air.
And then it was dubbed.
Coke, it came on, we watched it for 5 minutes, we turned it off.
See, I've never been... I guess because I started watching so many dubs, I've never been snobby about dubs.
Mm.
I am a little bit more now, but There are some that I remember so fondly dubbed that I struggle to go back to subs.
Mm.
Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, which is one of my top five animes of all time, I think has a fantastic English dub.
Mm.
And because it's so dense and technical, it's actually much easier to listen to it than read it, I find. Mm-hmm. Cowboy Bebop has a phenomenal English dub.
I'm just not going to comment on that one.
You don't agree? You don't like the... Really? Mm. I love the English dub of Bebop.
I found for an English dub it was passable, but... Yeah, it's similar with Evangelion, the Japanese...
Evangelion I thought was good too.
...cast for that was basically a dream team as far as Japan is concerned, all the top voice actors at the time. And Bebop's got at least two of the returning cast members from Evangelion.
Right.
So,
was Bebop after Evangelion?
Mm-hmm?
Was Bebop after Evangelion?
Yeah. Yeah, Bebop's like, what, 99, 2000?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And the caliber of that voice talent, any dub is just going to come off to me as secondary. But,
well, as I say,
but part of it's... Yeah, what you see first. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I enjoy Fist of the North Star in Japanese now, but I'll always have a soft spot for that streamlined
dub. That was another dub, one. Fist of the North Star was another one that was in those early... although I never liked Fist of the North Star. I tended to veer towards the sci-fi ones a lot more, because I'm more of a sci-fi guy.
Right.
More than the fantasy ones. But, okay, so we hit the Evangelion hits big and that's huge. The boom expands.
Right.
We're still VHSing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like Bubblegum Crisis 2040 is hitting on VHS. I remember I got all those on VHS. And then as we start to hit into the DVD age in 99 into 2000, I was still going strong. That's when, Escaflowne, I still have, I think, on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Into Read or Die and a lot of things in the early 2000s, into the mid 2000s, for a long time that was, that I would buy anything, almost anything anime,
right?
But Macross, after 2 and Plus, especially the big wait between 3 and 4 of Plus on VHS, because the tapes were one episode of tape, I recall,
they were.
And so when the DVDs came out, there were two DVDs and there were two tape. I was like, two a disc. I was like, ooh, fancy. It was years. So a friend of mine in 97 or 96, I can't remember, towards the end of high school, my best friend who was studying, who kept studying Japanese like I should have because I'm an idiot and he was smarter than me, went to Japan on a school trip.
Right.
And he... went over there and he came back and he goes, dude, there's more Macross. Because he was like me, he loved Toon, loved Plus. Was so on the original, but he loved, especially Plus, he thought it was great. Loved the YF-19, it was his plane.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months ago, I saw him for the first time in years and I showed him that and he blew his mind. Sorry, I pointed to the Arcadia YF-19.
Right.
Blew his mind.
So he'd been out of the loop?
Yeah, he's not into it anymore. Yeah.
Hopefully you got him.
I showed him the opening to Frontier. He's like, wow, it looks really good. And I was like, well. But so he came back from Japan. He goes, there's more Macross. There's more than just what we've seen. I said, really? He goes, yeah, it goes up to 7. And I'm like, up? Really? So he goes, yeah, so it must go. The first, because by this point we'd figured out that Robotech was 3 shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think Animega had put out its...
The remaster
of this Macross. Mm-hmm. Or at least someone had put out, and we'd
seen... Well, there were those tapes which had the so-called perfect
version. The perfect version, yeah.
Which had one episode of each, the Robotech and Macross.
So I'd seen a few of those, and so I didn't prefer it, because at the time I preferred dubs. I was like... Because I tend to do other things while I'm watching... TV shows, like I'd be watching while I was on the computer or watching while I was doing other stuff.
Mm.
Subtitles were a pain in the ass because I had to sit and focus. Right. I couldn't just watch whatever I wanted.
Mm.
So while I was still preferred Robot, I was like, I can't wait until they do a dub of Macross. Then everything will be right with the world. So I saw in that, and then I now understood that because it was 3 shows, I was like, okay, so you got Macross Saga. Then Macross 2, because it's clearly number 2 after number 1.
Right.
And now, and you know what, watching it later, I saw it says 2092, but then Macross Plus never tells you what... I think at the start of it, it tells you it's 2030-something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I never paid attention to the dates. I was just, there's Macross, then there's Macross 2.
Mm.
Somehow the Macross gets destroyed and is just ahead, and yet by Macross Plus they must rebuild it, because there it is again. I guess because it's the ship that saved everyone, they built it out of nostalgia. That makes sense.
Mm.
So he came back and he showed me a box for a model kit that he had bought for a bright red YF-19. And he's like, this is from Macross 7. I was like, wow, did you find anything else? He goes, well, I think I found, and he showed me a model kit of a blue YF-19. He's like, I think this must be from Macross 4, 5, or 6. How he didn't notice the Mac 7 logo looked exactly the same, I don't know. But he's like, it's clearly different, so it must be from one of the ones between Macross Plus and Macross 7.
Right.
For years, we were under this assumption, and we could never find any information out about these missing Macross shows.
Ah, pre-internet Macross fandom.
Yes, badass. So eventually we figured out, I think he figured it out with his rudimentary Japanese that he never cared about that much. I think he eventually got to this point where he's like, you know what? I think Macross 7 is the name of the ship. And it's the next one after Plus. Hmm. And we were like, ah. But it honestly wasn't until the internet was a big thing in like more like early 2000s, mid-2000s, that I realized that Macross 2 didn't fit the continuity. That was one that for years I couldn't figure out how, why it was all ignored and everything. Like, obviously now I know, but at the time, for a long time, I didn't know. So 7, we never saw it. We just had, we saw the guy with the guitar, and we're like, all right, that's the guy with the guitar.
Right.
The model kit, I don't think, had a pilot, so we didn't understand that he flew the red plane or that he did it with a guitar.
Right.
Years later, we found a model kit in a shop. I think it was, do you remember under the QV, no, the Galleries Victoria, there was Astro Hobby?
Under the galleries, see, when I was
there's doing one, there was galleries one down
Victoria
in
Victoria, probably didn't exist yet.
Oh, okay.
If I was buying kits, I'd go down to, if you go into Chinatown, there was Modeler's World.
Right, and it was in that little arcade just off Haymarket.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they were the same people owned both.
Okay.
So yeah, the same sort of stuff you found at both.
It was ridiculously expensive. That's one of the reasons I really was never into Valks when I was a kid, because I couldn't afford them.
Bought the 148 Grey Low Vis Valk.
Okay.
For the whopping over exorbitant price of $200.
Sheesh.
At I think at Astro Hobby, but might have been at Modeler's World. And brought it home, and everyone was like, because at the time, you know, if you wanted to take a photo to put it online, you took a photo and then you scanned it.
Mm-hmm. You took a photo, developed
the photo, and then scanned it. And I don't think I ever really bothered with that on Macross World, but because I was on Macross World by that point, by the 148s, of course. But Astro Hobby and Modeler's World, that's where we found, it must have been Modeler's World, now that I think about it. We found a model kit of this cool black stealth Macross plane.
Hmm.
And we were like, oh, I wonder what that one's from. I think at that point we'd figured out Macross 7 was the ship.
Okay.
So we were like, all right, so and it was the VF-17 Nightmare. Well, VF-17, bunch of symbols we couldn't read.
Mm.
So we're like, all right, VF-17. So this is earlier than the 19, except it looks newer. But all right, sure, the VF-19. So between us, we had these model kits of these random planes that we put together incredibly badly. So we had a 19S, a 19, a YF-19, a 17, and the 19 Kai.
Hmm.
And I didn't see Macross 7 until about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
Would
it be too much of a jump forward to ask?
Because we've been going on too long.
What your initial take was on that when you
on 7?
Because 7 is often the turning point for many, many people.
Well, okay, so we got to. Okay, this is where I'm going to lose what little audience is still listening after the 20-minute talk about Hawaii. So we went to. So by this point, I'm well entrenched in Macross World. I started on Macross World when the 172 Yamato 19 and 21 and 11 came out. That's when I started talking on there, especially on their toy forums.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember a lot of the. I'm one of the old time. Like the forums rebooted a couple of times, but right. I was definitely one of the original guys back then. I never stood out because I got information way after everybody else because I was in Australia, but.
Yeah.
I was there. So, So it wasn't until those bootleg shops that I was talking about, the Hong Kong bootleg shops that I didn't realize were bootlegged, that I finally saw 7. And that is because I went in there and found the Zero box, Zero had just finished, so that's 2006.
No, it wasn't that long, was it?
I thought the last episode.
2004. It was 2004. It finished.
Was it?
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember. I thought it was a bit. Well, I must have got the box set of all of them. I must have got later. I think it was 2005 or 2006. Okay. I got this set, and they had the set of it was a 2-part set for all of Macross 7. And I'm like, oh yeah, the one I've never seen. So I went and got it. Now by this point, I knew what happens in it. I knew that it was controversial. I knew he flew the thing with a guitar. I knew, because I mean, this is pre-YouTube, so you can't just go and jump on and find a clip. You'd hear about things and you'd see pictures, but you wouldn't be able to watch stuff because you'd have to download full versions of it. This is even really before torrenting was a huge thing, especially for me in 2005. So I knew the stories. I knew roughly what happened. I'd seen photos. He flies it with a guitar. I was a bit thrown by that. I knew it used sound energy, and it was considered, the people said it was dumb. It's the silly one. It's the one that doesn't make sense. But I was like, well, I really want to watch everything. I want to have seen everything to do with Macross at least once. So I watched it through. And Dynamite and the movies and everything.
Okay.
So I have seen everything that Macross has to offer in an animated form. I don't mind it. It's definitely not my favorite. But the reason I don't like it as much as some of the others, I think, is different for most people. I have no problem with the characters. I have no problem with the general gist of the story. He flies up with a guitar, the sound force, all that. No problem. I am at heart a filmmaker. I was a filmmaker for a long time before I had a daughter and had to quit a lot of that sort of stuff. So I tend to look at these sort of things on a very technical level. And Macross 7, I think its biggest fault is it's too long. It's far too long. It is stretched out and dragged on and repetitive. I've always thought that one day when I've got oodles of time, I'm going to sit and I'm going to do a cut. And now I reckon if you can knock Macross 7 down to 26 episodes, I think you've got a much more palatable story. Because at 52 episodes, you don't even get the sound. I mean, Soundforce doesn't get introduced until somewhere in the 30s. Stuff happens, and then it, like, and this is where we come back to Craig doesn't remember names very well. So you've got, there's the guy who loves beauty.
Gavel.
And you've got the big monster one that he hangs out with.
I've forgotten his name too.
Right. When they crash on the planet, they go down, one of the other Macross fleets calls in and is like, hey dudes, we found a planet, you want to come visit? And they're like, alright, we'll come hang.
So shit gets serious.
Right. Shit gets serious. And yet they are on that planet for like, it feels like forever. Just stuck. Macross is stuck, the Mac 7 stuck with its arm up in the air for... And if you're watching a week at a time, for weeks. Now shit's happening, but you're still there. What's her name's in a ball? Civil?
Yeah.
Is in a ball with Alto singing at her.
Alto sings?
Not Alto. With Basara singing at her.
This is quite the director's cut you're putting together in your head.
Shut up. I told you names. With Basara singing at her forever. Oh my god, forever. And Basara becomes more of an asshole the longer you have him do anything. When he's ignoring people to go off and sing and not telling anyone what he's doing or anything, that's fine for a little bit. But when it goes on forever, suddenly it's like, Jesus, jerk, just do something. Like, somebody do something, have something happen. That big monster, the reason I brought up the big monster, he attacks and gets driven away
multiple times.
Many, 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 many times.
Right.
And it just goes on and on and on. And by the, like, I can watch the first 10, 15, fine. I can watch the last 10, 15, fine. It's the 20-something in the middle that just drag their feet. And so I think that if you could somehow master cut it down to 25, 26 episodes, same as Frontier, same as most of the original, the first climax, the originals were at 25, right?
Right.
Then you've got a show. You've got something that's it's different, certainly. It's still silly, but let's face it, Macross is about a pop singer who saves the galaxy. Macross Plus is about a cyber pop singer who takes over everyone with a song. Seven being about a guy with a guitar trying to replicate... and I've always thought he's trying to replicate Minmay. Minmay saved the galaxy with a song. He's like, well, she can do it, I can do it. In my head, that was... And I never understood why he never brought that up. Because in a universe where pop music literally brought peace... Why is a guy with a guitar saying, well, I'm going to sing at people to bring peace, a crazy idea? Or as crazy an idea as they present it. Because it's happened before. It's literally happened before within the lifetime of a lot of the people involved. Certainly two of the main characters were best friends with two of the people directly involved in the whole affair. So it's no... Basara's core concept and idea is no sillier than anything else that happens in Macross. Macross 7's about two girls, two different singers arguing over a guy. And they've got... I mean, this is obviously oversimplifying everything. But, so I think that 7, and I don't know where you fall on 7.
No, I mean, that's from another cast. But no, I... Back when I first watched 7, I was... sent a VHS tape from an old exchange student in Japan, and that was my first exposure, and I was just like blown away by the fact that Max was back. It's like,
yeah,
Max is back. I'm watching for Max. The Valk action's kind of not animated too great, but I don't care. I'm here for the music rocks, the opening's got CG, and I have Max. What more do I want?
Yeah,
like, but I hear that many people in Western fandom, after those first, especially many people seem to have watched the first 4 episodes over and over because that was all they could get for a while, just had this really, really negative reaction. And I don't know if this is a cultural thing, but the few Australian fans I've talked to tend to be more laid back about it. They're like, oh, it is what it is. I'll take what fun I can get from it.
Well, I think it's because we didn't really see it until... Because, again, the VHS exchanges and all the things that they talk about, like a lot of US fans talk about, didn't happen here. Well, it sounds like it happened a little more for you, but it certainly didn't happen for me. I got what came out at retail. That was it. And so, if it didn't get a retail release in Australia, I never saw it. That's why I'm apparently in Hawaii, they got to see a bunch of Gundam.
Right.
The first Gundam I ever saw was Gundam Wing when it aired on Cartoon Network. Before that...
You have my condolences.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch much of it. But, actually, I think that might have been the thing that was airing around the same time as Technomate, as I think about it. I could be wrong. But, So Macross 7, by the time I saw it, I knew what I was getting into. So I was like, okay, I can accept the goofiness. I just can't accept the storytelling problems. It's just long and arduous and painful. And, you know, Gamlin, like, my least favorite character in Macross is Miu. No, that's the girl from Plus.
From Plus, yeah. Names.
Pink hair.
Milen.
See, I was close. Milen, Miyun, it's on the right track.
Milen. They start with M.
Yeah, they both start with M. And end in N.
And Milia. Everyone's...
Well, Milia I can remember. But I hate her. I hate her. Because she is the least decisive... Like, she gets angry about nothing all the time. When she does get angry about something, she can't express it. She's over-sexualized for a 14-year-old. Like, I think she's the worst over-sexualization in Macross. Because at least Cheryl and Ranka are, like, 17.
Right.
Which is still not good. But that's anime. Anime over-sexualizes everyone when they get to 16, 17.
Right.
Milan is 14 years old. She has two grown men. Well, she has one grown man who's after her, which her mum is trying to set her up with. And another grown man who she's in love with, despite the fact that he ignores her or, you know, essentially ignores her.
Right.
She's there because she's a part of the band, and he thinks that she's got singing potential. I don't think... I defy anyone to show me a moment in Macross 7 that proves that that Bersa has anything close to feelings for Miyun. He'll...
Milan.
Oh, whatever. Milan. This is where everyone... See, I told you, this is where people are going to be like,
this, oh, no, this is
this
great.
Dumb shit, we're, don't know anything.
We're going to do... You know, this is the ultimate crossover. Right?
Yeah. So... you know, she strings along Gamelin, knowing how Gamelin feels, strings him along. She keeps going after Basra, despite the fact that Basra doesn't know anything. She arrogantly throws herself into harm's way and then gets screwed, like, and then gets caught up in things and has to be rescued many, many times.
I will say I was always of the opinion, or maybe I just presumed, that Milan must have looked older than her years, because you had that time where she went onto the bridge to, because she was trying to set up Max and Amelia to come to her gig to get them to sit together, right? So she turns up, granted, Minmay-ish, big sunglasses, fur coat, lipstick, and all the bridge brains like, oh my god, he's doing some young model.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, you know, then Exodore's like, well... That's his daughter. And they're like, what? And even guys pass him on the way, like, whoa. Well, no one seemed to be looking at her as a 14-year-old.
Right. I guess it's the second closing where it's her in the bath and getting ready to dress, and that's...
Doing the naked pose with a
thing. Yeah, that's the one that's like...
That's the poster you don't want to be caught coming through customs with.
Yeah, right. we're talking off air about like interviews to do, there's one. If you ever ask about what Milena's supposed to represent, I'd be really curious, isn't it?
Interesting.
But the so Seven. By the time I saw it, I was like, nope, this doesn't bother me at all. Now, I dropped down to Macross fandom for a little while and was into other things. And so I missed... So I saw Zero. And so I remember seeing 1 and 2. At least 1 and 2. And then... there was a gap or something. I don't know. Whatever the gap was. And I lost interest for a bit. And so when I saw that set that I was talking about, which had all 5, I went, hey, finally I can watch the ending.
Right.
So I watched 3, 4, 5.
Right.
Well, watched the whole thing together. So Zero, which is another one that I guess is very controversial amongst folk.
It seems to provide what a lot of, at least with the Western fandom, were claiming they wanted. You know, Destroids, grittiness, Fokker, an emphasis on the mecha. And yet some protoculture-powered rocks that could float kind of made all that irrelevant.
Well, apparently. I think that's a different... A separate debate in some ways, because... everything about Macross is a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. There's love triangles, there's plot triangles, everything's a triangle. And the three pillars to make Macross work are mecha, music, and a love triangle. I think.
No, that's correct.
And you can't do a Macross show that doesn't have one of those, or you're watching something else. If you want to watch a Macross show without music or a love triangle, watch Yukikaze. Because it's jet fighters in a sort of gritty setting with some trippiness and lots of action and flying around, but with no significant music and with no significant love... Well, there's no love triangle at all, unless you count Yukikaze and the two lead male characters. The guy who was voiced by Roy in the English version, I can't remember the names. I actually don't mind Yukikaze, I still can't remember. But anyway, so I think what throws people about Zero is the ending.
Right.
The what the hell happened ending. Which I admit, the first time I saw it, I was like, what was that? But, and it was definitely Kawamori during his hippie phase.
Arjuna. Earth Girl Arjuna, yeah.
Oh my phase. God, that show is unwatchable. So bad. Sorry, Kawamori, but it really blew. I like all your other stuff, but yeah, it's got this hippy dippy spiritual vibe. I mean, there's no pop music. The only songs are Sarah's song. The only sung song is Sarah's. Really, there's no The love triangle is much more subtle. I mean, the two girls are definitely in love with Shin, but it's not a lot. And I think it's because it's short. It's not this big, long, drawn-out affair. The animation is spectacular. The mechs, the Zeros, they're in like my top three. The Zero S is probably only behind the 29 and the Excalibur as my favorite planes. Like the YF-19, I think is my favorite, is far and away my favorite Macross jet. It's just awesome. And any 19 variation, I will inevitably love. I like the 25s, but I tend to like them more naked, more than I like them with all the armor on. But the 29, I think, is a great mesh of the armor, and it's got the cool pop-up lasers, and I just think the 29's awesome. Fastbacks suck, but the main 29's a great plane.
The lasers, cannon, turret, whatever you want to call it, on the 29 gives us an interesting conundrum with Macross, which has always been about, you know, the Itano Circus, the missile spam.
Yeah.
And those cannons completely negate the need for missiles because it's auto-targeting, and they are really powerful.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Macross 30, it's just like, I'm flying this way. There's dudes behind me. Boink. Just shoot behind you, and you pulverize them. I want to see more of that in combat because they're really underutilized.
Yeah.
It was only in one movie. But I'd like to see more of it. The thought of it potentially being cannon fodder... in a new series.
I don't think they'll. But he'll make the 29s. I'd be very surprised.
The hints we're getting is that the 30 will make a further appearance. We just don't know what capacity. After Zero, then, let's talk about Frontier really briefly. Then I want to get back onto toys, which is obviously where, looking at this room,
I know a little bit about
where your passion lies.
So after Frontier Zero,
came out. Oh, right. So after Zero, there would have been that lull.
The lull. So again, I saw Zero around 2006-ish. Got really back into Macross. That was around the time, to speak of the toys, that Yamada started bringing out their Zero toys.
Right, right.
So when Frontier was coming, I remember when it was called Macross 25, it was going to be Macross F.
Right.
The names were sort of shifting around as the rumors flew, much like Delta. Now, if that's what it's called. I hope it's that, because I think that's a good name. But it might be Macross Triangle or something, but... I think Macross Delta is a cool name, so I hope that's what it goes with. But I remember the DeCulture episode of one, and that took I had to watch it raw because I couldn't find a sub for a long, 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 long time. And then again, I got caught up with other stuff. This is the disadvantage of having varied interests. You get caught. I get really into something, and everything else gets excluded until I get into the next thing or go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, like, by the time, so I watched the DeCulture episode, I was like, "Ah, that was pretty cool. I like the 25s, and really want to know what happens next." And then I didn't see anything for quite a while because I got into something else. And by the time I came back, I think about 3/4 of the series was out. So I binge watched 1 through, and I still like the DeCulture episode better than 1. But mostly. But I watched 1 through 2. I think it was around 18, somewhere around. It was around the time that Ranka was really falling, and there's the episode where she's lying in the street, and Alta's brother finds her.
Cheryl.
What did I say?
Ranka. Anyways, I'm sure a lot.
Around the time that Cheryl was falling in the street,
I'm sure people would like that version of the story. If there was a version with Ranka. Destitute.
And even that, I think that's in the 20s now that I think about it, the early 20s. But anyway, so that was I remember getting up to that one. That was the first time I had to wait a week between that one and the next one. So I got to the end of Frontier and loved it. To date, probably my favorite series.
Wow.
Although I like the movies more. But I'm very visually focused.
Mm-hmm.
So the music and stuff bothers me a lot. I think 7 has the best music. When they're not repeating the same song ad nauseum. Again, another reason to make it shorter. But I thoroughly enjoyed Frontier. Thoroughly. I liked the characters, for the most part. I liked the story. The animation is gorgeous. The mechs are cool. The ending is very satisfying. It's a really good... It's not too long. It never really drags its feet. It's got an episode here or there, but it doesn't drag its feet for long enough for you to go... all right, I'm over it now. Mm. It's usually only like one, maybe two episodes, and then it's off and rolling again. Mm. So the pacing, I think, is quite good overall. The it's a fun ride. Like Michelle's death, I think, is one of the best out of nowhere and yet handled really well deaths since Roy. Because I mean, Gold's is is pretty full on, but it happens right at the end.
Right.
Whereas Michelle, you had time to really feel the fallout from it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the whole episode about his sister.
Yeah.
I thought that
was early on too. That one.
Yeah, it was really well done, and it was not the kind of thing that you expect to be covered in the Macross show, which is normally a little lighter in tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of relatively dark topics, themes covered in that series, which maybe it's just the people who are noisier on the internet, but that seem to get lost under the "oh my god, rank as a little kid."
Well, okay, so that comes down to that's a different thing. Too, it's different to Miyun for a couple of reasons. Rank.
Okay, we're going to have to put a counter up with this.
Yeah. Ding!
Yes.
All right, it's different to pink. Green hair is different to pink hair for several reasons.
Okay, so tell me, Melania's different from her mother. No, wait.
Shut up. Why, I gotta. For a few reasons.
Okay.
Melania is definitely sexualized a lot. I always feel with Ronka and Cheryl that they're opposing contrast and purpose. I think the movie's highlighted better with the music a little bit.
Mm.
You get Cheryl's concert, and it's her all sexualized, and she's making out with herself, and it's this, you know, this hyper-sexualized, hyper... it's a play on she's a pop idol because she's hot. I mean, she can sing, and actually, I think I prefer Cheryl's voice to Ronka's. But, you know, she can sing, but she's very much, it's sex and it's titillating and everything. Ronka's cute and fuzzy and makes you feel good and stuff like that. And again, the movie highlights it when Ronka's first concert's a song about with teddy bears and trees. And actually, I think that sequence is one of the most visually spectacular sequences in all of Frontier series, all the movies. And so in the series, and I maintain, I've said this on the forums and I've had people disagree with me, but I maintain, it's not a love triangle. It's a love straight line. Because at no point, I think, does Alto show anything other than brotherly or friendly concern for Ronka. Ever. Mm. Not once. With Cheryl, he's got that antagonistic, I like you, you like me, but we can't say anything. Well, we don't say anything about it vibe. Almost from the beginning. When he flies out on in the episode 7, the first time you see the quarter transform, he's got her earring. He has a sit down with her, and she's like, "No, you take it, and you bring it back to me." The vibe is there right from that moment. Show me a moment in Frontier where he shows anything other than being a friend concerned to Ronka, ever. So I never understood why at the end people are like, "Well, who's he going to choose?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? He slept with Cheryl 3 episodes ago. He's chosen." The episode where it's right near the end, it's like 24 or 25, where they're having dinner, Cheryl and Alto are having dinner, and we know that Cheryl's dying at this point, and she's like on the couch, and he picks her up and he takes her to bed, and then she grabs him and pulls him down. They clearly hooked up. At that point, they were clear, to my mind, they were living together and sleeping together. So I've never understood the people who are like, "Well, I don't like Ronka because, you know, it's... You know, she's sexualizing the little kid." And I'm like, "No, she's not." When Ronka becomes a star, she's dressed in a carrot suit for a while. And then she's, you know, she's wearing a dress. She's never in, like, low-cut outfits or anything like that. You occasionally see her in bikinis, but they're very sort of conservative bikinis compared to Cheryl's "look at my titties" outfits. She represents being sweet and friendly. She's the shy girl. She's the kid.
Well, a lot of the sexualization of Ronka came post-series, where you got the nose art of her riding the... Was it a bullet? No, riding some of the hard-on.
Right,
where she's butt naked, except for the angle.
Right.
And things like that.
But that's... This is why we're going to... I think we were talking about this off-air, I can't remember, where I pay attention to the shows and the toys.
Mm.
And if there's extraneous material that expands on one of those two things within the context of those things, great.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's like weird art of the two of them or them in weird outfits or anything like that, I don't care.
And I've got to say, I think Frontier does the kind of, you know, this is a weird outfit, this is Ranker and Cheryl wearing stuff they've never worn, would never wear, but looking hot together.
Yeah.
Frontier does that more than any other series I've come across since Evangelion.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't do it to Evangelion's the same extent, because Gainax completely whores their characters out.
And Evangelion's been out a lot longer.
Right, right. But even now, it's the last Oshare Macross show they did, shop they did in Tokyo in October, had, even though it was a celebration, supposedly, of the 20th anniversary of Macross 7 and Macross Plus, they had brand new Cheryl and Ranker art cards.
Yeah.
And they were kind of dressed in kind of like, they look like they were kind of working the street
right.
in bad weather as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, that's a side of Ranker I didn't think I'd see on a piece of art.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's all come post-series. So during the series, I know some people, you know, there's that, the astral projection of her in the end where she kind of appears to Alto when he's in the cockpit.
But I mean, yeah, and she's naked, but it's not sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
She's naked, that's like just her. It's a pure... sort of exactly. energy form of her. Exactly. I mean, right, you get a little bit of that with Cheryl too, to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But even when they're doing that to Cheryl in those moments, it's not sexualized. Cheryl is more sexualized wearing clothes than she ever is in her naked energy forms.
Right.
Or naked energy projections, or whatever you want to call it. I just think that the relationships across the board in Frontier are much more complex and much deeper and much... broader than they are in almost any other Macross series. Mm. I get the hate. I get the people, the hardcore fans are like, why did they have to be singing and music and lightness and joy and fun? And Frontier's not perfect. It's certainly... they overdo some of Cheryl's songs, not to a Basara extent, but they don't overuse them. I think they made... There's some episodes where the animation's just horrendous. The Macross Zero episode has... Halfway through the episode, it's like they forgot how to draw everyone. With the cat that thing attacks. Thing yeah.
attacking, yeah.
It's like, what the hell just happened? You go from some of the other animation, which is just phenomenal, to that. It's like, did you guys, like, fall asleep? Or actually, if you watch, there's an anime area at the moment called Shirobako.
Okay, I've heard good things about
it. It's really, really good. And there's an episode where the big show that went on before was called Jiggly Jiggly Heaven. And it's known as a disaster because... it all fell apart, and there's an episode where they highlight that you see this girl bouncing along,
uh-huh.
and it's really nice animated, and then it gets crappier and crappier as it goes because they ran out of to highlight that they were running out of money, and I think that was that episode of Frontier just dropped the ball. But I think that so I loved Frontier, and I think the Frontier movies do an excellent job of doing a lot of this. Things that they did make slight mistakes of in the series, right, with two massive exceptions.
Okay.
Michael and Ozma should have died. Especially Michael. Or Michelle, however you want to say it. Because Michelle's death in the series is a huge turning point for Clan. It's a huge turning point for Alta.
Mm-hmm.
It gives the show a real kick that it needs at a point right when it needs a kick. He goes out well, like it's at the same time a pointless and a heroic death. It's incredibly well handled, and the movies plays let's like whack-a-mole with they're dead, they're alive. Like Ozma should have died when if he had thrown Cheryl I'm jumping around a little bit here.
Definitely.
Michelle die like gets shot off the. I want to say gets shot off a bridge in the first one, and then you see a shot of him standing with Clan.
On the first movie,
at the end of the first movie,
he's on top of the building or the top of the bridge pylon to get.
And she says, "No, you're too exposed," and he does it anyway. Takes the shot and then gets hit.
Yeah, and you think, "Well, that's it. This is how they killed him." But yeah,
that one I can kind of. I'm like, hey, I can let that go slide. But at the end, when he and Clan get caught in the energy beam, they should be dead. That should have been the end of those characters. Because past that point, they serve no other purpose in the story other than just being there. They should have gone. That should have been their death. And Ozma, I feel the same, because again, Ozma and Cheryl nearly die at the same point where they get sucked down into space, and then I don't remember how they survive.
Icon
saves them, right? And then Ozma jumps back in his plane and does nothing. I don't think nothing.
He gets his plane, and then that's the last you
see.
That's
the last you see of him. Yeah. Ozma, if Ozma had they'd been sucked out, and Ozma had like thrown Cheryl back in, or something, you know what I mean? Like somehow got her back in the ship before the bubble closed or whatever like that, and then he had died. Fine.
Of course, the ultimate pairing would be Ozma should have ended up with Cheryl.
Kathy's all right.
She's not bad, but you know, I'm just for all the pretty boy haters, like, all right, give Ozma Cheryl.
I'm just hoping you'd be impressed. I got Kathy's name right. Lucas teased death. I don't mind that not.
I stood happening. Up in the cinema. I was like, "Yes, he's dead. Yes." And then, like, literally 5 minutes later, I'm like, "Oh god damn!"
But again, it would have been a cheap way to get rid of that character. I think
I don't care. Not for Luca.
I don't care about Luca, but I care. Like, I'm not anti Luca. I'm not for Luca. Right. Again, I think compared to some of the other annoying characters we've had across this franchise, Luca's not even close to near the top of them. It's got some very adorable, like, I like the way he names all this stuff and really cares about his, like, when Cheryl nicks off with his flight suit, he's like crying over the he got dirty. I think that's really funny. But in a show that had very few genuinely funny moments, I think. So Frontier was the one that really I was like, and then when I saw the movies, I was like, this is great. I love it. So I tend to think of the movies as what happened. I wish Michelle had died, just because I think that would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Alto disappearing and Cheryl in a coma and all that sort of stuff, I think that's a really interesting place to end your series. Mm-hmm. It's a really brave choice in a lot of ways, because your lead character's gone, and you're essentially your lead female character is in a coma. And your other lead female character has matured greatly at that point.
Mm.
I think Ranka's journey throughout the movies is a much more... I think Ranka is a much more interesting character in the movies than she is in the series, where she's definitely played as more the, oh, Alto's so pretty, I'm such a little girl, hee hee hee. In the movies, I think she's got a lot more oomph to her, especially by the end. So